Blog Talk Radio.
Then he'd like to go in some very theatrical manner, falling into the drum, or into the bed.
Go to sleep.
Just go and not know that you went.
That's right.
Can I ask you if you think you go anywhere after you die?
No, I don't think you go anywhere. I hope you just go, just lie in the ground.
Yeah.
Happy. At rest at last.
But at rest implies being conscious in some way.
Don't have to rake anymore. No, I just think it's just fine. I think I think that would be fine.
Because
I don't feel that. Never felt the slightest interest in the next world. I think it's here, and I think anything good that you're going to do, you should do for other people here, and not do anything to make yourself have a happy time in the next world, you know.
That really goes
back to the Egyptian days when I was buried with all my jewels to show that I was rich and I'd like to stay rich.
Yeah. That affects the way you lead your life, though, that conviction. I mean, if people haven't made their minds up on that.
No, I don't believe in religion. I think religion, I believe in Christ, and I believe in the example of a perfect human being.
Mm-hmm.
That if he certainly proved that if you can live for other people, away from yourself, you will be happy. And if you live for yourself, you will be unhappy, and you will then not be able to sleep or do anything else, finally. And I think that insofar as people live, and I really believe this very passionately, insofar as people do live with the other fellow in mind, they have to be happy. Because it raises you up, you know.
Sort of golden rule.
I think so. Mm-hmm. I really think so. And I think insofar as that can be observed, after all, we have no notion as to what the next world is, if there is one.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no point in that. But it's always been, I hear a lot of people saying, well, the difference between good and bad? I know totally, for myself, the difference between right and wrong. Totally. Mm-hmm. I know this because wrong makes me very uncomfortable, and right makes me very happy. And I don't think it's so very difficult to know when you're doing the right thing and when you're doing the wrong thing. And I think each person, the right thing, the wrong thing, varies.
Mm-hmm.
But committing a stinking act to someone else should make you unhappy. If it doesn't, you're diseased.
Yeah.
And you certainly are miserable.
But somebody said morality is self-evident.
Absolutely self-evident. A decent behavior in relation to our fellow man is the source of tremendous joy and tremendous lack of pain. I mean, you can rise above with the spirit. You can rise above anything. If you're totally dedicated, as Christ was, to someone else, to other people, to the notion of other people, then he could rise above all pain and all sorts of things. And I believe that. I do believe that entirely. And I think many, many people practice it.
It's August 28th, 2011, on the Atlantic side of Florida in the Banana Republic of the United States. And I'm Gwendolyn H. Berry, and this is Here Be Monsters. I'm here today with, and I'm very lucky to be with, Jack Jodell of Saturday Afternoon Post and Roundtree 7 online blogs, liberal, progressive, uncompromising. Also, joining us a bit later is Al Osorio, or Oso, a contributor to Greenville Post, Wild, Wild Left blog and radio, and the Roundtree7.com blog. And today, I think we're watching the last of Hurricane Irene dance her way up into the Bering Straits, let's hope.
Yes.
And I don't think there's any clarification needed here to understand the difference between great and famous, because Miss Hepburn was a great lady, and thoughts can be brought to bear on today's discussion about altruism and empathy and how it plays a part in our political ideals here in the United States. And Jack has been writing some wonderful pieces on actually the altruism of millionaires in the past and present. I have a couple of announcements, Jack, before we get into it.
Sure.
It should be noted that this week they've collected, as of this week, they've collected over 130,000 oil spill-related illness claims, and the government still is not addressing them or acknowledging them. And one wonders what kind of deal the president made with BP for this to happen.
Yeah.
On Thursday last, Sheree Foytlin and 55 others were arrested in front of the White House protesting. They were in solidarity with the crowd protesting from tarsandsproject.org, who are protesting the tar sands pipeline project that Obama is putting his pen to. At the same time, the Macondo Horizon location well has begun to leak. Excuse me, I'm a little ill. Or a little under, to seriously leak again. And while the booms are going out in an attempt to gather all the oil, you know, into a pool at sea and I guess suck it up, this administration is ignoring it until it crawls up their political asses. I'm going to tell you, that's the truth.
Boy.
Right now.
Yeah.
And the Gulf is dead. And the poison is killing my neighbors. And it, you know, a storm, Jack, blows into the size of the climate change hurricanes that are beginning to happen ever since Katrina. Do you see the size of this puppy? She was what my mother would have called a real whore, you know?
Yeah,
she
huge. Yeah.
Oh, and with all that rain and weather, if it blows in to the Gulf, it'll call up all that Corexit and crude and spread it all over inland to and just hurry the poison along. And so, you know, it's just – so call the White House, people. That's my message here. This also call the White House on this tar sands pipeline. On that call, tell them – what are you doing about the Macondo well? And why would you, you know, sign this tar sands pipeline project, which is basically going to allow 700,000 barrels of crude a day to flow in an imperfect, hastily built for profit pipeline from Canada to Texas. Jack, that's a carbon Armageddon being okayed by Obama.
That's terrible.
That's a lie to his campaign promises. Mm-hmm. Of course, now he's got new ones to make. We'll see where it goes.
Mm-hmm.
I also wanted to ask people to remember to call in for one other. I mean, you hit three with a blow here tomorrow. There is the Chicano moratorium. Do you know about that?
I haven't heard about it.
Nah, it's Monday is the anniversary of the death of Ruben Salazar. Do you remember him?
Yeah, I don't recall the story, but I remember the name.
Yeah, the name is, yes. And on August 29th in 1971, Mr. Salazar, a journalist, was working with the Chicano Moratorium in anti-war activism in 1969, and the police killed him. This was, you know, activists from local colleges and members of the Brown Berets. And that's a year before Black September. That very, very tumultuous time. And the Chicano moratorium has continued on to this day, and they have been, and central to it in its inception and central to it to this day is a gentleman named Carlos Montes. And now you pronounce that, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly, but it's M-O-N-T-E-S, and I'm sure Oso will correct me when he gets here. But Montes, and he has been incarcerated with 23 other anti-war activists and international solidarity activists they're being repressed by the FBI and a grand jury indictment in Los Angeles. So the need for people to call in to the president at 202-456-1111 or the attorney general. His name is Eric Holder. You don't hear about him much because he really doesn't do that effing much. Mm. And his number is 202-514-2001. Ask them on all three counts over there at the White House to please quit. Quit doing all of this stuff. I am a little under the weather, so I do apologize to the audience for not being too on top of it, but I'm trying to get this stuff out.
Yeah.
And, Jack, you're doing some wonderful work over at Saturday Afternoon Post and over on to Roundtree 7. Talk about the altruism of some of the more well-heeled
people. First of all, as I've already pointed out in my own blog, I have been very critical of the very wealthiest Americans for quite some time, but I realize that not all rich people are bad, and my faith has been renewed by this phenomenon called the Patriotic Millionaires. It's a group of now 200 plus millionaires who have made it the hard way in America. These people aren't trust funders, you know, people that had it easy and grew up pampered like Grover Norquist and those types of people. No, these are people that made it with the good old-fashioned way by earning their money, by getting their knuckles dirty, by taking their bumps and grinds, and somehow along the way, through luck, tenacity, a number of things worked their way, and they became millionaires, fabulously wealthy people. And, of course, they've been aided and abetted by Bush's tax cuts. And a lot of them now have reacted in horror to what these tax cuts have done to the country. All the troubles that we've had with the deficit, with our national debt. When Bush came into office in 2001, he inherited a surplus that Bill Clinton had put together, a federal budget surplus. The first one we'd had in many, many, many years, and that was accomplished because Bill Clinton raised the marginal tax rate on millionaires to a certain point, you know, 39.6% is what it was, and whereupon Bush came into office and immediately lowered it to 35%. And gave them all other kinds of incentives to not pay tax. And the end result is this horrible deficit that we have right now, you know, coupled with a couple of unpaid wars and, you know, things like that. And, you know, the end result
wasn't it also Bush's pharmaceutical prescription program that also added to that? It wasn't.
Oh,
paid
it
for,
sure
was
did.
It?
Yeah, that was another part of it. True, he expanded federal payments for Medicare drugs and things like that. And part of that dirty little ploy that he did, though, is that he made it impossible for the government itself to negotiate fairer drug prices with the pharmaceutical companies. So, you know, the guy pulled a lot of double whammies and disguised them in very patriotic, pithy talk, which was all a bunch of lies, as we all know. But that being neither here nor there, a few, you know, startling facts remain about the Bush era and even before that. You know, back in Dwight Eisenhower's day, when some of us weren't even born, or when I was a little child, and you too, Gwen, the marginal tax rate for the top incomes was 91%. 91 pennies out of every dollar that a rich person made went to taxes. Now, that was the marginal tax rate, you know, without deductions and so forth. But at any rate, that had slowly been whittled down over the years to the current 35%. And of that 35%, hardly anybody pays that much. Most of them pay about 18 or 19%. So there's you know, one reason for the huge deficit in debt that we are incurring right now. But since the late 1970s, upper incomes have raised 281% in that time period. In a little over 30
yeah.
years, upper incomes have raised 281%. Now, no
oh,
one else's
well,
income...
And,
go ahead.
Well, isn't it true? Is that, yes, everybody else's income has dropped, but isn't it also true that it's their profit or their incomes are from their company profits that
right.
are it's not just the taxes, but they're charging much more for much less in many instances of profiteer or, you know, business. Business.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a fact that, you know, worker productivity has shot through the roof in the last 15 years, but worker pay for that increase in productivity has not kept pace. It's gone backward.
Right.
That's a disgrace. But at any rate, the marginal tax rate in the time period since the late 1970s, Reagan got it reduced from 70% to 50% while he was in office, and then it went down from there. The marginal tax rate since the late 1970s has decreased from 70% down to 35%. And I'll tell you something. Along with that 281% increase in actual income, these rich people have been making a ton of money on top of that because of the tax increases. So any way you look at it, they're getting way ahead, we're getting way behind, and it's starting to affect the middle class and eradicate that. That's bad. So make a long story short.
Well, they've worked at destroying all the unions, of course, too.
Oh, yes. That's part of their program, get rid of the unions and export jobs overseas. So Americans now have to compete with the lowest paid people on earth for jobs. It's disgusting what they've been doing, and they've been unopposed mainly since, you know, really since the Reagan days. But that's neither here nor there. The thing that's amazing here is that there are millionaires out there that aren't as greedy as many Americans are, and many of the wealthy are, and these guys know the score. They've risen up through the ranks. They're millionaires. They're fabulously wealthy. And they didn't want a tax decrease. They didn't want Bush's tax cuts, but of course they got them anyway. So what they finally did, they've seen the battle over the deficit and how it paralyzed the government, the public debt talks the last few months, and they just decided, hey, this is enough bullcrap. We've been fed a bunch of crap over the years, and they knew that the Republican claims about trickle-down economics, and if you give the rich more money,
some
of it will trickle down to the people. It doesn't happen, and they've proven that now. And they sent a letter to Congress and the president in July saying, get rid of these Bush tax cuts. Get rid of them once and for all. They're unneeded. We don't need them. And they came up with a lot of explanations as to why they're bad. And we already knew it, of course, but it's all down on paper. It's great, great reading. You can go to their site at www.patrioticmillionaires.org and read the whole letter yourself. It's just phenomenal. They've done a complete analysis of the fallacies of the Republican economic argument. And they've refuted it, and these people are incredible. They're actually asking for their taxes to be raised as a patriotic gesture because they don't need the extra money, and they understand how devastating it's been to the rest of the economy.
Wow, that sounds great. That website again?
Yeah, www.patrioticmillionaires.org.
Wow.
And it's got their list there of the letters, the letter that they sent to the Congress and to the president. And interestingly enough, there's been just a little bit of a little bit of blowback from the right on this. You know, a lot of these guys are claiming these guys are hypocrites, and if they didn't want to pay those taxes, they wouldn't have to. Well, you know what? A lot of those guys have sent money into the Treasury to kind of compensate for, you know, the tax breaks that they feel that they're unworthy of and don't need. And that's neither here nor there, because whether they respond that way or not, or just are exhorting everybody else to encourage their congresspeople to get rid of that crazy tax break for millionaires, their efforts are good. There's no doubt about it. There's no way you can deny that. And they're looking at everybody's best benefit. You know, millionaires, it's proven a fact. It's a proven fact. The wealthy, they save their money after a certain point, that when their needs are met, they don't need to consume stuff anymore. So they don't go on a mass consumer binge like regular people would do of much lower income if they got a little extra money in their pocket, because they already have all the necessary luxuries and good things that they have. What they do is they save their money and they put it into financial assets. And a lot of it is invested overseas rather than here. And, you know, that's not benefiting this country.
That's true. That's,
you know,
extraordinarily true. You bring up a great unknown, that will not generally known or talked about issue. And that is where all of these people that are making all of this money off of the back of America are putting their money. They're putting
mm-hmm.
their money in new buildings over in Dubai.
Mm-hmm.
They're putting
yeah.
their money into any kind of foreign big energy.
Sure.
Because, you know, they're looking at trying to get their own little consortium of power to, you know, as any corporate watchdog will do,
mm-hmm.
wanting to grab the largest shares they can, you know.
Right, exactly.
A lot of them are getting. I kind of grew up on the sidelines of this community and understand what you mean
mm-hmm.
when you say, you know, they're not. No, it used to be that, you know, before the first stock market crash and Glass-Steagall and all that, when Glass-Steagall was put into effect, people, you know, were always, there was Bethlehem Steel, there was, you know, the wealthy invested in the country, in building the country.
Mm-hmm.
I think we forget that. You know, the Vanderbilts, they really did spend a lot of money, create a lot of our transportation line, railroad, you know.
They did.
The whole thing.
And, yes, they profited from it, but so did the
oh, yeah,
entire
they
country.
Should.
So did the
That's
entire
right.
country. Yeah,
that's
and that's
right.
what's lacking today. When you set up a plant in China, who profits? Oh, yeah, we get minimally
Chinese.
Lower prices here on imported goods, but it swamps our trade deficit. It screws everything up. So it's not
and
a good.
And it keeps despicable companies in business like
mm-hmm.
Walmart. Walmart
oh, yeah.
is one of the most despicable corporations on the planet.
Well, they're totally against labor.
Abusive. Oh, they're culturally abusive. They're
yeah. mm-hmm.
employee abusive. They're
oh, yeah.
and they care nothing for the economy of any country or any community. They
no, as long as it benefits Walmart, it's good for them. You know.
You know, and my sister will say to me, and she has every right to, you know, with times being what they are, she'll say, but Gwen, I can go over to Walmart and get this stuff for, you know, sometimes as low as 70% of what I would spend elsewhere, even at,
mm-hmm.
you know, like Winn-Dixie, for groceries or for goods like going to Target. You go to Walmart and it's going to cost you less.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, well, shoot, we're all broke, but I guess it's a choice. See, I really understand how the community will say, well, we have to go to Walmart, but look what Walmart's doing to your community. They actually only offer a finite number of jobs, right?
Right, exactly.
And yet
minimum wage or slightly over that.
And everybody is less than full time, so that there's no kind, and they
and very few benefits, if any.
They discriminate against women.
Oh yes, they do.
And oh, very much so. But of course, the Supreme Court has come up on their side. You know.
Oh,
so
that is as this Supreme Court would. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you know, they wouldn't know how to woman the fuck up, as Diane says. You should excuse my language. I've got the flu. They wouldn't know how to woman up if it were up to saving their lives. They not only are abusive culturally and to women, and biculturally, I mean that they will step on every minority, and they consider everybody not white a minority.
They'll step on anybody as long as it benefits them. They don't care what color, race, creed, anything you are. As long as it benefits them, they'll do what it takes to step on you. That's what they do. That's the way they operate.
Well,
and
here
they do it
in the South, here in the South, Jack, you should know that the majority of management positions at Walmart belong to white people only.
Oh, I can imagine. I can imagine. Sure.
You know,
sure.
I mean, jeez, it's, you know, and they had to, I think we should mention, too, that a lot of people who, a lot of the older families, like, you know, Kennedys, of course, their political family, but there were a lot of well-heeled families that also, in the last 50 years of this country have been very, you know, or longer, geez. I was thinking in terms of, because we were unable to do the dedication out there in Washington for the new MLK monument.
Right.
I think it's cool. I like
it. It's beautiful.
There's a lot of controversy about
it's
it, but
nice.
I think it's wonderful.
Yeah, there shouldn't be any controversy about it. It's beautiful.
It really,
and what it represents
really,
is outstanding.
It represents the way forward for this planet. You ask me, and MLK and his activism, his style of protest, his nonviolent participation in change for this country in the civil rights movement, you know, at the time of the Great Society. Well, here we are in the dark ages of America, the new banana republic on this continent.
Right,
and,
right.
We are dealing with Michael Q is in the chat room, yes, sir. Mm. Michael, I sound funny because I got the flu and I'm really getting banged today, but he says consumers don't care about where the goods come from. They only care that the price
is
low, Walmart,
right.
or it's cool, which is Apple. And I know what he's talking about with Apple. I am an Apple fan.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not a fan of the company, the way the company does business.
Right.
Things karmically come around. Have you noticed? I just got to take a second here. And at the end of this, Michael says that people do more than talk a good game. It's hard to get people to do more than talk a good game, but ask them to give up shopping at Walmart or to give up their iPads. And then you'll get a mass uprising, which he has a valid point. He really does.
Well, people, you know, with decreased incomes and the scarcity of jobs and people fearful of losing a job and working two and three sometimes just to make ends meet.
I know a
people,
few, yeah.
People are almost being forced into shopping at Walmart. I hate to say it, but that's the way things are.
No,
and that's the way they want it.
My sister, and that's the way they are. Now, I am sometimes week to week. It's the end of the month, so I am week to week right now. And I got to tell you, I still won't be going to Walmart to get my eggs and my, you know,
good for you.
Milk and stuff.
Good for you.
I will be going down to the little place in town, the store in town, and shopping with them. Mm-hmm. We need to support. We need to be self-sustainable communities. That's
we can't be supporting multinational corporations on everything all the time. You know, you see nothing but a glut of multinational corporation propaganda on advertising on TV shows. It's all over the place. We are surrounded by that crap. We need to get back down to basics. The thank you with a handshake and a look in your eye kind of person, the mom and pop kind of shop that they're struggling to make ends meet, but they put it together and they're prospering.
Yeah.
That's what we need.
Handmade companies make a big difference in communities.
Right.
And
if you
string all the lights of the different communities together, mm-hmm. I mean, it makes sense, and it also heals the planet. So today we also have Oso on with us, Al Osorio, who, as I said at the top of the show, is a contributor to
Hi, Oso, how are you doing?
Hey, Jack, I'm fine. Hi, Gwen.
Good,
how are you guys doing?
Good, very good. Just before we cut away, I just want to make one point. One of the patriotic millionaires is named Ron Garrett, and he's just an entrepreneur, a philanthropist and an entrepreneur, and he had a very great observation that I believe bears repeating. He said rich people don't create a robust economy. Rich people are the result of a robust economy, and we do not have a robust economy right now. And the reason we don't is that the rich are taking everything and leaving very, very little for anybody else, including startup businesses. So, you know, that's a good point there, and I think that bears some thought.
Absolutely. They don't want the federal government funding projects. They would much rather have the private sector fund it at interest.
Yeah. Hey, that's disgusting. I know. It's unbelievable. They don't want any help for anybody except big rich corporations. That's the only time they want the federal government involved, is to give them corporate welfare.
Exactly.
I can't get a lick of corporate welfare myself. I mean, I'm a corporation, and I
you're not big enough.
You know,
you're not big enough.
Instead of going to them like $10,000 a plate dinners and giving money, in no time at all they'd be on your side, Gwen.
Oh, you bet. Yeah, you'd have Bank of America guys coming up to you saying they'd like to help you, like Rick Perry had, you know.
There you go.
But that's what a smart entrepreneur would do. They would go out and they would hustle up 10 grand, go to a public, you know, a private affair dinner and have the money for the plate and then make all the hobnobbing friends that they could while they were there and then walk on. Yeah, that's the way. It's like you can't tell me the three martini lunch is dead. It ain't dead.
No, it ain't dead at all. They want more of it. They want a six martini lunch.
Hey, it's on a different floor, and if you don't know that, then you're just not part of the in crowd.
Exactly right. It's terrible.
And on the same, here we are talking about the altruism that is out there, positively. On the other hand, there's the idea that that we shouldn't, you know, charity has become a real drag in some places. If we're talking about self-sustainability of communities and self-sustainability, that's the other thing. Of course, I don't know how any of several generations are going to be self-sustainable. They haven't got the education behind them for it. Now, a lot of them are just smart kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the majority of children really need some direction, guidance, and education. We aren't providing that.
Right.
But I have seen the position come up recently where it's like in reference to large charity helping out like the famine and drought situations. We need to fix those problems at the source. Is the idea. It's not the idea that charity's wrong. It's the idea that we need to fix those. Well, I guess they're saying actually charity should be eschewed for creating a solution to these problems. But
that makes sense.
These problems,
I can
Yes, we definitely need to. However, the tool we have in the moment is charity. I'm going to use Diane's saying. I'm going to say that I just woman the fuck up with this one too, fella.
Mm-hmm.
If we aren't taking care of children and people dying, there's something wrong with us. And this is coming back to Miss Hepburn's quote at the beginning of the show where she was saying, you know, it really is about what you can do for others, how you are of service to your community. Because people who are not of some kind of service, who are not from their own heart, I think that those folks are very unhappy. And you know, she said when you do something, she said, what was it, stinking?
Mm-hmm.
She meant when you do a despicable act, well, that's just diseased. And she's right, especially
You're absolutely
now.
Right. Yeah, and that's the basis for good government service, for the actual public servant to be in Washington or at the state level, taking care of people, helping people out.
Absolutely. You know, I often hear the right say, years ago you didn't need the government because people banded together and worked to help each other out. And it sounds good, I suppose, and in a village that would happen, but in the modern world it's just not feasible.
No.
Well, it hasn't been true since the 1930s. These guys on the right, they don't know what they're talking about. They're nuts.
Exactly.
Libertarian.
It's something like, needs a heart transplant. How many bake sales would that take? Or somebody
about
to lose their
insane.
House. How many bake sales would come up with $2,000 a month? So it just it's more of the anti-government rhetoric. And government is the only thing which, in my opinion, can really act in the public interest. You know, I mean,
you
can give to, and that's a good thing.
Yeah,
but you can't
right.
expect that to take up the slack for what government is capable of doing.
Well, Reagan, with that crazy quote about government is not the solution, it's the problem, he was all wet with that crazy, crazy, errant observation. Now, yes, every now and then government can get, a little overblown and a little over-involved and a little screwed up here, or a little screwed up there, but that doesn't mean a total condemnation of the entire system is in order.
Absolutely.
No, that's crazy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, see, go ahead, Oso.
I was just going to say, because the private sector can really only work at a profit.
Right.
You know, if you needed to build some sort of public way to sterilize water or to filter water, the private
Hoover
sector
Dam.
Would have to do it at a profit.
Yeah.
That's just the way they function. They'd have to make a profit in order to pay their shareholders and such. It's really only the government which can work strictly in the public interest and in effect take a loss on something which will provide a service to poor people.
For everybody. It'll provide a benefit for the common good, like the TVA, the Hoover Dam, all kinds of examples are out there. But, oh, no, those are just terrible, according to the right. Those guys are all wet.
Yeah. 100%.
It is about you're definitely talking about. It is about the profits, but I mean profit, not profit. I would go back to Miss Hepburn's quotes at the beginning of the show and how she said that people who act so stinking are just, you know, they're terrible people. And, anybody who's talking about church and you know, wanting to be buried with their money is obvious, you know. It's you know, don't give me church. Give me your good deeds. How open is your heart? And that brings around the point of how emotions and empathy play a part in how we look at our world and therefore define our politics. And I think one of the finest writers that I've seen in a long time who is consistently opening our hearts to his actual ideals and political beliefs and his political convictions is Osorio. I mean,
I would say so too.
You're always writing about, look at this. This is how a person dies that we are killing. because yeah. of war.
You make
it's
it appeal
plain.
To people on a personal level.
Right. You say,
thank
here's
you,
your ass hanging out here in a puddle of blood. How do you like it?
Mm-hmm.
How does it feel? You
yeah.
know,
well,
you're ripping them.
The thing I wrote today, I kind of wanted to make the point that the wars that we fight against, often it's against tribal people who
mm-hmm.
we should not look down upon either. But there's
right.
also a lot of people in Iraq, for instance, who were like us and very cultured and probably more cultured than a lot of Americans. So, you know, I
mm-hmm.
tried to make
yeah.
a story where it was a young woman whose family was cultured and, you know, they went to the symphony and such, and then upon an invasion and the collapse,
mm-hmm.
they're at a subsistence level. And
right.
here was someone who lived a good life,
yep.
was a decent person, and yet
mm-hmm.
she dies because of
simply
trying to feed her family and being in the wrong place at the wrong time. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I wanted people to think that everybody's just like us. There's no, I mean, it's simple to say that, but we really don't understand the fact that when we kill these people, we kill someone who loves their children as much
exactly.
as we love our children.
They're just like us.
Yes, yes.
No, we're a very myopic people. We think the whole world revolves around us, and we are sadly mistaken.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I gotta say this.
Mm-hmm.
I saw this very clearly in writing in the last few days.
Mm-hmm.
Not all Americans are myopic. Many Americans
oh,
are
you know, very true.
Tribal, might call
right.
tribal.
Right.
I was struck by, I'm always struck by the way that Osho writes, and Osho comes
mm-hmm.
from a given set of ancestors who have also been at the barrel end of a U.S. Army gun. You know,
mm-hmm, right.
he's First Nations, Indigenous, whatever is the proper PC title for Osho. I don't know, but I do know this. I know that we write from who we are, and we.
Right.
when we're writing truthfully and we're
mm-hmm.
putting it down honestly. And
mm-hmm.
that's a flow of consciousness that Osho is gifted with. And so
exactly.
I think that he often reflects what it is like to be
yeah.
on the opposite side of a United States gun
yes.
in the hands of military because
mm-hmm.
he has the DNA for it.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound terrible or does it sound right?
It's kind of true.
It sounds you know, exactly
when
right.
When I was young, when I was in high school and the Vietnam War was reaching its crescendo,
mm-hmm.
I remember thinking to myself, okay, if the Sioux rose up right now, what would our troops do? And
mm-hmm.
the obvious answer was they would invade, they would put them down again.
Oh,
so
yeah.
that I look upon the Army as, well, I mean, I began to look upon them as they weren't good guys that I thought
mm-hmm.
they would be, because anybody who fought against my people and kept my people down is my enemy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, and then, of course, there's plenty of Indians who are in the Army and who risk their lives, but it's the choice they made.
Well,
mass
stereotypes are always bad, and the
yeah.
big what I was referring to earlier, Gwen, was mass culture in this country. It makes people
yeah.
be myopic. It really does.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody talks about the types of things, hardly anybody talks about the types of things that we talk about on our blogs or Roundtree 7 or anything like that. Most people are more concerned about having the next beer, hanging out
sure.
with their friends at the bar, going to the lake place. You know, I mean, they're so divorced from the rest of the world, and the way that we live is so much better. Even with all our problems today, it's so much better than almost anywhere else on Earth. It's just unreal. And we
sure.
don't even realize that. We take it for granted.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And, you know, there's poor people who are struggling here, too, but there's...
Mm-hmm.
The most of us, when we talk of struggle, it's kind of like you described. We, you know, we're tightening our belt straps. Maybe
mm-hmm.
we're not taking as many vehicle trips. But when you look
right.
at how bad things are in Mexico, or the reservations
yeah.
are the worst parts
where
of
people
the
don't even have cars or can't even afford them.
Sure. It was, well, it's just like, kind of like Katrina. You know, I heard mm-hmm. so many people say, when there were refugees and when there were people either looting people, drowning people, dying, and people said, well, hell, why didn't they drive out? You know, why did they stay?
Yeah.
Now we're trying to put out, they didn't
that
have vehicles.
Illustrates my point perfectly.
Yeah, they couldn't even get on a bus, and they couldn't abandon what little they had. So
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Absolutely right.
Yeah, it's just
totally
it's crazy.
Understand.
People just don't understand enough. People, Americans, you know, we have more computers than almost anywhere on Earth. But what are people using them for? Computer games? Is that it? Letters to
I
their friends, sending jokes around? What the hell's wrong with this country?
I have two friends. Well, my sister included. She studies with the computer, but she doesn't use it like we do.
Mm-hmm.
And my roommate, he all he does is his fly simulations for his pilot classes and
mm-hmm.
play games. He's got huge extended memory and stuff.
Well,
play games.
You know, it's the land of the free and people can do what they want. But I'll tell you what,
right.
It's a shame that these people are
yes.
not using the gift that they have right on their desktop or in their laptop that can give them the information on virtually anything they want to know about in the entire world. There's no reason for any American to be ignorant and stupid.
Yeah, there's no reason to repeat the politician's lies because it's very simple to search and look it up and find.
Right, right.
And, you know, when people say, well, the public doesn't know about it, but, you know, none of us here is wealthy, but yet we do have the Internet, and we do have
right.
the ability and curiosity. So
right.
if we can do it, anybody can.
Exactly
or
right.
There are plenty of people who are living hand-to-mouth, but what I mean is the vast
right.
majority.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, yeah.
Come
Did
on.
You
yeah.
know, speaking of hand-to-mouth, though, and we were talking earlier about charity and the need for it, in
mm-hmm.
this country, there's over a million children who are homeless. Did you know that?
Oh, that's terrible. I had no idea it was that high. But I believe it. It's terrible.
It's up to that. It wasn't, I think it hit it sometime in the back end of 2010, and
mm-hmm.
it's been climbing over every month, like the unemployment rate that goes
mm-hmm.
up and down. People don't pay attention to it, though. It's not
well,
as
it's unpleasant for them, and it's not
finances.
Fun. It's not entertaining, so they don't care about it. That's the problem. People got to be entertained too damn much in this country, and they've got to have everything be fun and pleasant, and you know they've got to people have got to deal with reality for God's sakes, you know, and they've got to get serious. They can't be living in La La Land or the next half hour sitcom
well,
and expect
people,
that's the way the world is.
Well, people are going to begin to pay attention as soon as either one or two things happen, and I think
mm-hmm.
both of you guys would agree with this. Either the money collapses or elemental catastrophes such as this, I will say it again, global climate change hurricane,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Irene, another one, and believe me, we're just beginning the whip end of the mean season. There's
oh,
more
yeah.
storms coming across from Africa now
oh, yeah.
and brewing.
There's certainly stuff
mm-hmm.
like that, too. I don't think there's any kind of dollar collapse on hand, but I do see almost you know, the disaster capitalism type of scenario where
mm-hmm.
austerity is forced upon us, and they continue
yeah.
to force
just
money
to support the rich, just to keep
and,
the rich rich. It's crazy.
Yeah, and that's definitely going to get worse here, and that's going to make it worse for all of us. And
yeah,
you know, who knows? Like
people.
I said, maybe next time people rise up in the ghettos, other people will join in.
Yeah, well, you know, let's hope it doesn't come to that. But if it does, let's hope that does happen, because that's
yeah.
probably
well,
the only way you're going to see real big change real fast in this country.
Yeah, if it's forced.
And I'll go back to MLK and his way of doing it, you know, the peaceful demonstration.
Right,
the,
not murdering and
you know,
shooting indiscriminately.
The, yeah, turn
and,
the
yeah.
other cheek. You know, let me tell you something. I mean, I've been arrested in protest when I was young, and they had nightsticks and all that, but we all knew what to do. We all went limp or go
mm-hmm.
low, as they
right.
say.
Right.
And I wasn't harmed. I was brutally handled into, mm-hmm. but I wasn't harmed.
Right.
And it just, that's the way it goes. There has not been, even in the London riots, those police have not manhandled, you know, anybody terribly that we know of.
Right. Well, they've got a better...
It hasn't been Ohio yet, you know?
Right. No, they've got a much better history over there of doing it the correct way instead of just going in there with the... with every gun and rifle, you know, blaring,
sure.
You know, it's they know how to handle those types of things.
I know what Oso's saying, though, and I have
mm-hmm.
to say that if things got terrible when we were marching in the street or something, and they, you know, I would always defend myself. I don't
mm-hmm.
think there's anybody who wouldn't defend themselves or defend
oh, of
their
course
friends.
Not. Right.
You know, and that's where things go badly. It goes
mm-hmm.
badly because, you know,
defending yourself doesn't mean pulling out a gun and blowing some guy's head off or taking a nightstick out of somebody's hand and beating their face in. That's,
no, it doesn't.
You know,
you're right.
Yeah, exactly.
No,
there is a correct way to do it, which is Martin Luther King's way, you know.
Yes. And basically just going low, just dropping down and doing it. There are more, but I was going to mention, look how many people showed up in Madison, Wisconsin.
Yeah, it was fabulous.
I mean,
and there was no bloodshed.
People.
No bloodshed.
No. And that's the wonderful thing about it. If people are motivated enough,
mm-hmm.
if the word gets out there enough, if the
mm-hmm.
energy and the consciousness is risen high enough,
mm-hmm. right.
people will respond to it. I mean, look at those. What did they call those things? Also, when they would send out on an iPhone or on a smartphone a message for everybody to meet up and do something at a certain place in a city. What is that called?
Was that Twittering?
Well, Twitter. Everybody would Twitter and
mm-hmm.
meet someplace and do something. And there's, like, videos of it. And, either do a song or everybody goes and ends up being a mime in a park or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's those phenomenon that went on. If people
mm-hmm.
are willing to do that, and there were people willing in New York City to go during their lunch hour and stay for the rest of the day, take a day off, you know, call in from their lunch hour to support the Verizon workers
right.
who were striking.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people are willing. It is about consciousness rising. And
it's about the word getting out and people getting that word. That's
right.
Very important. Yeah, very true.
Oh, flash mob. Thank you, Michael.
Yeah, flash mob. There
that
you
was
go.
A, flash mobs, flash mobs.
Yeah. Yep.
I can't remember
those South Carolina dudes are smart.
Yeah, they
That's
are.
That's right.
They know what they're doing. They're listening. We're just jabbering on.
Oh, that's great.
You know, you mentioned Dr. King, though. The one thing that really amazed me about him was the fact that I looked back at one of his speeches. I think it was the Beyond Vietnam speech, and
mm-hmm.
he was holding forth on everything that went on in Vietnam, the French colonizing, how we funded 80% of that.
Oh, I remember,
I know that now. Most of us know that now who dig into things because we have the Internet. But
right.
he knew it at the time.
Yeah, well, he was on top of stuff. He knew his stuff. He was a very brilliant man. He researched stuff. He knew what he was talking about. And that's what we need more Americans to do.
Well, wait a minute, though. Don't forget, don't overlook the fact that Dr. King had very close associations with Democrats who were in power at the time in Congress and such. And
mm-hmm.
he was being fed information. You can bet your boots. He was being fed information by good politicians who were supporting him and saying, "Hey, look, use this."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we had some decent people there too. Although at the time, when he moved past civil rights and into anti-war, that's when he started to make enemies with the Democratic Party.
Right. Well, the Democratic Party got split on that issue, and that cost them the 68 election, among other things. You know. But that's true.
Yeah.
That kind of that was a very divisive time, and it really ripped to shreds a lot of coalitions and things that had been in place for many years, and that was too bad. That was a tragedy.
We are coming to the bottom of the hour, gentlemen, and I really want to thank you both for being here. And also thank you so much for stopping in and talking about the way you do it, because I think more people should be reading Osho. I really do, because I think it would open their consciousness.
Yeah, it's very altruistic and very interesting. Yep,
thank you.
Yeah, it would open their consciousness a whole lot more.
Yeah.
But I want to remind folks that in 3 minutes, 4 minutes, right here on Blog Talk Radio, over at, you can find it under New Mercury Media, is Progressive News Network Hour with Rick Spezak. And tonight he has on Florida Congressman Ted Deutsch and Dr. Lynn Ringenberg, who is the president of Florida Physicians for Social Responsibility. That's a mouthful.
Good.
And Shahid Freeman, who is a state civil rights and educational activist, so it should be a pretty dang good show.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2 weeks, Jack and I will be talking to a candidate, a Democratic candidate by the name of Patrick Murphy, who is running for Allen West seat.
Great. I'll look forward to that. That sounds great.
Gwen, I got to drop off. Thanks for having me, Jack. Good talking to you, buddy.
Good to talk to you, Osho. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Good
Bye-bye.
Night, Osho. Thank you. As usual, I'd like to thank Michael Hugh.
Mike,
who's out there in South Carolina, who's just actually done fine where he is through Irene. And Jack, thanks a lot. Appreciate
Thank you,
it
Gwen.
Very much.
We just got to keep on spreading the word, and that's what we're doing every week in our own little way.
So it is about the message. Definitely
go to blog. Go to our blogs at Roundtree 7 and Saturday Afternoon Post. Just Google those, and you'll get to where you need to go, and you'll find out all kinds of interesting things on a daily or semi-daily basis.
That's quite true. We have a lot to offer. That would be our sponsor is Daughters of ISIS Inc., and you can find a link on our show page. And our other sponsor is Roundtree 7, and that's a numeral 7.com. It is a blog. And thank you, Jack. I guess we're over with for today. Everybody,
great. Look forward to next time,
Mr.
Gwen.
Rick.
Thank you very much.
Hey, you're welcome. I'll sign us out of here with something with something really, really nice that you gave me, actually.
Oh, good. Okay. All right. Yeah.
Bye, Jack.